One of the mysteries of life is how some people come to hear the call of God upon their lives. How that call comes to them, how that call comes to us. How it is we become aware that God knows us and loves us and has a purpose for us. But there's a mystery around this kind of event because it's hard to really get our hands around what it is that happens in a call and how it is that we know that there's a higher purpose for our life. And there is no better reflection of the mysteriousness of how we receive a calling than in the New Testament itself, in the story of Simon Peter, whose call we heard about in the Gospel of John, because it so happens the New Testament tells that story in three ways that are radically different from each other. The first story of Simon's call is found in the Gospel of Mark. And in this story, Jesus is walking one day by the side of the Sea of Galilee, near the town of Capernaum, a fishing village on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus is walking down the seashore one day, and off to the right he can see the busy streets of the city, and to the left he can see the water of the Sea of Galilee, and in front of him on the beach he can see all the fishers working, repairing their boats, mending their nets, casting out into the sea. He can see this commerce, this hubbub of business taking place. But his attention is drawn to two people in particular. Two brothers, one whose name was Simon and the other whose name was Andrew. And those two brothers were casting their fishing net out into the sea. And their net would go out. It was a round net with weights around the rims, and it would sink down to the bottom of the water, and they would pull the net in, and whatever fish were caught in that net, they would take and stick in their bucket, and then they'd throw the net back out again, over and over all day long. Pretty tedious work. Boring, repetitive, maybe non-fulfilling work. And as they are casting their nets out into the sea, Jesus comes up to them and says, "Follow me and I'll make you fish for people." And I can almost picture Simon and Andrew looking up, looking at each other, in communication going on without words between their eyes. Maybe they think this work is not getting us anywhere, but they drop their net. They follow Jesus down the beach and they never come back to fishing again. And that's one way how people experience the call. They can experience it as a radical, decisive moment in their life. And before that moment, they were one way. And after that moment, they're another way. A singular moment of radical change. But then we get Luke's story of the call of Simon Peter. Now in Luke's story, Jesus and Simon already know each other because at the end of the fourth chapter of Luke, Jesus is a guest in Simon's house and he heals Simon's mother-in-law. And then at the beginning of the fifth chapter, we see Jesus standing by the side of Lake Gennesaret and he's teaching the crowd. Only if you can picture Jesus by the side of a lake and all these people in front of him, dozens or hundreds of people, and the lake behind him, and they're all pressing in to hear him teach, you can imagine that's a little bit of a precarious place to be standing with the water behind you and the people coming at you. So he sees a familiar face out in the crowd, Simon's face, and he says, "Simon, do me a favor, get me your boat." Simon says, "Sure thing." He goes off, he gets his fishing boat. Jesus sits in the fishing boat and he pulls a few feet out into the water. And there he can teach the crowd without being crowded in by them. And he teaches the crowd until he's done. And then Jesus says to Simon, "Take me out to deeper water Simon says, sure thing. So he paddles the boat out into the water, maybe 100 yards, 200 yards into the middle of the lake. And then Jesus says to Simon, cast out your net. And Simon says, but I've been fishing all day. I haven't caught a thing. It's just a bad day to fish. He says, well, cast it on the other side of the boat. And I can almost imagine Simon thinking, what are you, a fisherman? What are you, a carpenter, telling me how to fish? I'm a fisher person for a living. But he decides to humor Jesus. And he casts his net out the other side of the boat. And when he starts to pull it in, it is filled with so many fish, he can't even get it into the boat. He has to call for help from other people in other boats. And there he is in this boat full of flopping fish. And he has been through an incredible, miraculous experience. And he recognizes that he's in the presence of the divine. And he is filled with awe. And he says, get away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. In the same way that the Hebrew prophets responded to their calls with a sense of unworthiness. But Jesus says, no, I choose you. And from now on, you're going to fish for people. But it's not one radical event. It comes out of a relationship. It comes out of a series of experiences of the presence of the divine in his life, the healing of his mother-in-law, the provision of fish on a day when they had caught nothing. And sometimes when we think about our calling, we realize that that one decisive moment was really preceded by a lot of other moments and is followed by a lot of moments as well. But then we get to this story that we've just heard from the Gospel of John, which is still different. This is not up in Galilee. This is down in Judea near the city of Bethany, near where John the Baptist has been baptizing people in the Jordan River. And as John is standing with two of his disciples that day, he sees Jesus coming towards him. And John says to those two disciples, behold, the Lamb of God. And when Jesus walks by, those two disciples get up, they leave John, and they start following Jesus. There he is walking down the beach, and these two people walking behind him, and he senses that he's being followed, so he turns around and says, what are you looking for? And they say, show us where you're from. And so he takes them and shows them metaphorically where he has come from. And one of those two disciples was Andrew. And according to John's story, Andrew then goes and finds his brother Simon and says, we found the Messiah. We found the one we've been waiting for. We found what we are looking for. And Andrew brings Simon to Jesus, and Simon becomes a part of the group of disciples, so that it's not a singular event, God and one person in a call. The call really comes out of a community. The call comes out of his family. The call comes out of the growing body of disciples. And he is called not to a singular individual relationship with Jesus, but into a relationship with a community. And this is also what a call is like. I think it must have been like that for Martin Luther King, who also felt, heard, and responded to the call of God on his life. When did Martin receive his call? Was it growing up as a child, as a member of an African-American community in Atlanta, Georgia, in the South, in an age when discrimination was practiced under law? Did it come when, in spite of the indignities he had to suffer, he was encouraged by his mother and his father not to give up hope and not to let go of his dignity? Did it come being a part of the church that his father preached in? Did it come hearing the messages from the Bible about a God who cares about liberation and who led his people from slavery to freedom? Did it come singing the hymns of liberation? Did it come being a part of a community of faith? Did Martin experience his call in college when he decided not to go on to work in medicine or law, but to go to seminary and to go into ministry to serve people in this way? Did his call come in seminary when he began to read widely from people like Mahatma Gandhi, who talked about Jesus' ethic of nonviolence and Gandhi's take on it, which is that Jesus wasn't just talking about how individuals respond to violence that they suffer, but how whole societies are to respond to violence? Or did his call come as he considered his place in the African-American community in this country in the 60s, a persecuted, discriminated against community that had such needs and such hopes and such aspirations, but needed leadership when he offered himself as a leader to that cause? Or did his call come when he had premonitions that he would probably have to give his life as a martyr for the cause that he was giving his life for? His call came at all points along the way, and he was responsible to that call. He followed that call. But most of all, it was a call that came from the community that he was a part of, and Martin understood his calling as being the creation of a community. He talked about the creation of the beloved community. He said that after you've done the work of reconciliation, the next step is to create the beloved community. His ideal was a community in which former adversaries could sit down at table together, and that they would be able to do this because in the fight for justice, he insisted that we do it in such a way that we respect our adversaries, and in so doing, we win their respect and we create community. We're not all the way there in terms of creating civil rights, although we've made a lot of progress, but perhaps the biggest work we still have to do is creating the beloved community. And I think we can relate to that as Bethany United Methodist Church, because we are a part of yet another aspect of the fight for civil rights. But just as important, and maybe more important than winning our legal rights, is to create a beloved community in this country in which people who feel passionately but differently can sit down at table together as part of the beloved community. This is the call that Martin Luther King heard. This is the call that he followed. And this is the call to which he would challenge us today to give ourselves to. The mystery of how a call can come.